Jenkins three, right wing to win it. He made it. He made the three from the right wing. That's the buzzer. Cats win it all. Cats win it all. Cats win it all. 31 years later, Villanova is the king of college basketball once again.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Tuesday. It's April 5th, 2016, and welcome to another day, another business day, another edition of The Opening Bell. We have lots to talk about today. First, the breaking news from around the world are the global markets in turmoil this morning. The Nikkei off nearly 2.5% overnight. Most of the European markets are lower this morning. The DAX leading the way by almost 3%. Dow futures have been lower, triple digits all morning long, off now 134 points. What's going on? Well, here's what we think it is. International Monetary Fund Managing Director Christine Lagarde has turned up the volume on calls for stronger action by the world's economies to boost growth, warning that the downside risks are increasing without decisive action. She's given a speech at Frankfurt's University today. She's prescribed specific moves, including for the United States to raise its minimum wage, for Europe to improve job training, and for emerging economies to cut fuel subsidies and boost social spending. Again, Dow futures are off nearly 100 points, 132 points. This morning in Asia, most of the indices are lower. The Nikkei off nearly 390 points. In Europe this morning, the DAX off nearly 300 as well. There is other news this morning as well. One of them is the Treasury Department announcing a new package of rules aimed at making tax inversions. That's when U.S. companies move abroad for lower tax rates, less financially appealing. The new regulations, the third round that the Treasury has put forward on inversions, seek to limit internal corporate borrowing that shifts profits out of the United States. There's a little bit of good news today. Minneapolis Federal Reserve President Neil Kashkari says he is comfortable with the current stance of U.S. monetary policy and expects moderate economic growth ahead. This morning on Twitter, the Chicago Federal Reserve chairman is being a little bit more cautious, tweeting that he would like to see a little bit more growth. Well, and then there's Chicago. Yesterday, an urban planning group went before the City Club of Chicago and delivered some really harsh medicine.
Everyone knows that Illinois is a fiscal wreck. Not everyone knows that Illinois is rapidly becoming a physical wreck.
That's the head of that group, Jim Riley, speaking before the Chicago Federation, the Chicago City Club. He says the state needs $43 billion over the next 10 years to make things right on the roads. And he says an increased gas tax is just one solution.
What would it take to get back on that 90% target? For the first time, we have a number, $43 billion. That's the size of our transportation deficit. That's what it would take to get back to a state of good repair.
Riley says if you add 30 cents to the gas tax, that may be a lot, but he says keep in mind it has not increased since 1991. Most growing startups are generally focused on increasing revenue and attracting users, but Chicago startup Guard Llama is more interested in beefing up personal protection and security.
911 is a great resource. We have the time to locate, unlock your phone, dial for help, and safely explain the nature of your emergency. Where 911 falls short is in situations where your offender has the element of surprise, or even worse, has your trust. Here's what Guard Llama does that others do not. Other companies require you to have their application open with your phone out, expecting an attack. Guard Llama allows for wireless activation, so you keep your phone safely tucked away in your purse or your pocket.
Guard Llama's founder is Joe Parisi. He joins us on The Opening Bell this morning. Joe, welcome to The Opening Bell here on WGN.
No, thanks for having me, Steve.
So tell us how, if you could, in like a minute and a half, how Guard Llama works, and then we'll get further into our conversation.
Okay, the product itself is pretty straightforward. We make hardware devices that are about the size of a car fob. There's a single button on it. If you get in trouble, you push the button, It sends a notification to your phone to grab your location and profile, and then sends that directly to a 24-hour emergency dispatch center. So the police know exactly who you are, what you look like, where you're located, with the push of a button.
As we heard one of your people tell us there in that opening clip, it is a little different, a lot different than 911. We'll get into that and exactly how it works and why people should be thinking about this. In our next segment, we're talking with the founder of Guard Llama, Joe Parisi. You can find Guard Llama on Twitter at The Guard Llama, L-L-A-M-A, and at GuardLlama.com.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Stocks and oil prices were lower yesterday as the outlook for U.S. interest rates remained clouded. The Dow closed down 55 points, the S&P 500 was off by 7, and the Nasdaq composite was unchanged. The international reach of the American auto industry grows longer. Ford Motor Company will invest $167 million to expand its factory in South Africa to build a new model to be exported elsewhere on the continent. Meanwhile, the Treasury Department is trying to make tax inversions when U.S. companies move abroad for lower tax rates less financially appealing. It's issued new regulations meant to limit internal corporate borrowing that shifts profits out of the United States. Forget the overall uncertainty in the Chinese economy. Investors are still willing to pay for art. A painting by Chinese artist Zhang Daqian sold for nearly $35 million at an auction in Hong Kong today. It's the most one of his works has ever fetched. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to The Opening Bell. We're talking with the founder of Guard Llama, Joe Parisi, who Guard Llama is a device that is a personal protection device. And Joe, before the break, we were talking about how this device works and how the technology works. But I'm interested, I think just as notable about this technology is how the company came to be. Tell us where Guard Llama started.
So my senior year of college, there was a freshman student that ended up deciding to finish a project in a local park. And in the middle of the day, she was kidnapped, raped, and murdered. And 3 days later, they identified her body with her cell phone. And so it always struck me as a very, very terrible set of, events. But, you know, everyone's instinct is if I get in trouble, I have a cell phone, you know, it's a modern era, and I'll be able to pick it up, I'll dial for help, and someone will come help me. And so, you know, you look at her scenario, and that wasn't an option, obviously. And so we started diving into the 911 system itself and looking at, are there other people that run into this problem? How common is this problem? And can we help solve this for people? And the answer is yes. You know, there's a lot of things that make the current system not ideal for people that are in an emergency, and so we solve that.
Well, how is it different from 911? Give us an example without giving away your technology secrets, obviously.
Of course. Well, 911 itself cannot. Most people don't realize that it cannot find you unless you state your exact address through the phone while you're on the emergency call with the 911 operator, right? So if I called 911 right now and I said, someone's breaking into my house, they're going to kill me, you have to come and just set my phone down, no one would ever show up because they don't have the ability to back their way into your phone. So I think it's a common misconception because in movies they do it all the time, but the reality is that it doesn't work that way. And so, you know, we fix that. I mean, if you call from a landline, they can definitely get to your house, right? Because that's what the system was made for back, you know, 30 or 40 years ago. They designed the system for landlines. And since then, cell phones have come around. And we just weren't really able to upgrade the infrastructure fast enough for the technology. And so now we're left with kind of this makeshift system.
And the plus here is that this is done with this, as you call it, this fob, the little key. It's like the thing you open your car with. So you don't have to really pull out your phone. How fast, how much more speed in getting help is that than calling, pulling it out, dialing 911, waiting for them to get to you, wait to, you know, to give them your location? Mm-hmm.
So that's the other major advantage of the system. The average 911 call is 2.5 minutes long, and that's provided that you were able to find your phone, unlock it, dial for help, and then start explaining the nature of your emergency, right? So The average call is 2.5 minutes long. We dispatch the police in under 30 seconds with your location and physical information, as well as if you have any health conditions, if you have an order of protection against someone else. There's a lot of very specific information that we relay in under 30 seconds and have the police on the way directly to you.
There's a lot of situations, as you mentioned, where you might be hiding in a closet or someplace where you don't want to speak, you don't want to be on the telephone. This will find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we work with the YWCA in Chicago. They're one of the largest domestic violence advocacy groups in the world. And, you know, that's a common problem specifically for domestic violence, right? I've spoken with a lot of women who would say as soon as their husband came home, he would grab their phone and take it and make sure that they weren't able to dial out. And then they had to basically just, you know, weather the storm. And so, you know, for situations like that, dialing 911, definitely not an option, right? You can't pick up your phone and say, hey, my husband came home and, you know, things are about to get nasty, right? Because they're just not going to allow you to do that.
What does the service cost, and are you thinking about expanding, and how is this being received by police?
So the system costs $120 a year, but we do have a promotion specifically for WGN that allows it to be only $100 a year, so it's like less than $2 a week. Right now we have gotten a decent amount of interest from Canada, so we have scoped out what it would take to expand there, and I guess it's kind of in the works. We'll see. We'll see what happens. If the market really pulls us into Canada, then we'll go. If not, then, you know, there's more than enough in the United States. I mean, we work anywhere in the United States right now, so it's not really a concern. It's a pretty big place.
As a startup that's got its roots in Chicago, what sort of challenges did you face getting to the point where you're at now?
You know, Chicago is an awesome startup community. I think the nature of people in the Midwest makes it just an awesome place to grow a business. You know, a lot of people helping people. And so I wouldn't start a company any other place. You know, I hear a lot of entrepreneurs complain about lack of capital or lack of funds. But I mean, if you look around the city, I mean, it's massive and it's made of money, right? I mean, these buildings are huge all the infrastructure and stuff. I mean, there's cash everywhere, so it's not really, I haven't found it to be as big of a problem as other people make it out to be. So, you know, sometimes you're strapped for talent, especially really, really quality tech talent can be a little bit more difficult to find because, you know, when everyone graduates from MIT, they shoot out to the Valley because it's like the Hollywood of technology, right? If you're going to be an actor, you shoot out to Hollywood. If you're going to be in tech, you shoot out to the Valley. But there's still a decent amount of really awesome engineers that hang out here. You just got to look for them. So
Joe Parisi is the founder of Guard Llama. You can find more at The Guard Llama on Twitter and theguardllama.com. There's also that promotion that he mentioned for WGN listeners if you want to sign up for the technology. Joe, best of luck to you. We'd like to stay in touch with you and see how this progresses.
Yeah, absolutely. Please do. I'm happy to talk anytime. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on The Opening Bell. Joe Parisi of Guard Llama.
From ABC News, Tech Trends, the science behind athletic tape used by Olympic champions. KT Tape is the most widely distributed kinesiology tape brand in the U.S., surging in popularity since the 2008 Olympics. Its purpose?
Create performance changes by increasing balance across the joint. You'll improve stability as well as power outputs. We know that if we have something that's being locked down or limited, we can create those changes.
Chiropractor Ted Forgum there. For three-time gold medalist Carrie Walsh Jennings, getting taped is routine.
It's the mental peace of mind, but it's also the sports performance aspect where I know what I'm getting.
Paralympic medalist Tucker Dupree will be sure to rock the U.S. logo in Rio.
The USA tape is really cool. That whole branding piece is amazing.
And in case you're not an athlete,
every time I get on a plane, I tape myself up beforehand. It makes the flight so much more comfortable.
KT Tape has partnered with seven total national governing bodies, including U.S. Cycling and Gymnastics, and you can see Olympic athletes using the tape this August in Rio. With Tech Trends, I'm Scott Goldberg, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's been about 5 years since Chicago-based Boeing launched the 787 Dreamliner. Nearly 400 of them are now in service, flying long-haul routes with about 20% more efficiency than their wide-body predecessors. But now the attention is focused at Boeing on the next model. First model, 787-8, is now making way for the 787-9 and the 787-10.
I don't want to steal any of these guys' thunder, but I'll tell you what, this is about as close to a flawless first flight as I could have imagined.
Boeing 536 Heavy, runway 14 left, clear for takeoff.
We're clear for takeoff, 14 left, 100.
That's Nat Sound from the launch of the 787-9, and reporter Ted Ross covers the airline industry. He is an airline. He is an expert in airlines. He's also the author, co-author of American Airlines, U.S. Airways, and the creation of the world's largest airlines. Been writing about this in thestreet.com. Ted, welcome to the opening bell.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And glad to have you. The 787 Dreamliner, when it first launched, had lots of problems. It was delayed. Hard to believe that Boeing's already up to 787-10. Ask the question, what is next? That's a good question. What is next, and what's the focus going to be?
Well, now we're at a point that 787, of course, is a technological marvel of our century, and now we're at a point where Boeing is pretty far into the development and delivery of the second aircraft, the 787-9, and has just started construction of the third aircraft, the 787-10, and they envision a family of all three aircraft. In about 3 years, the 787-10 will also be available. The airplanes all do different things, and they are changing the face of global commercial aviation.
That is a huge statement. Tell us how they are doing that.
Well, because these are long-haul aircraft, but they're, as you say, 20% more efficient than predecessors, so you can fly routes with them that couldn't be flown previously. You know, you have these big, wide-body, long-haul aircraft that are very big because they can carry sufficient fuel, but this aircraft can fly the same distances as the 777 and the 747, but carry less fuel. So they can go on what's called thinner routes that might have fewer passengers.
It's interesting because when the 787 got off the ground, it was a rough takeoff, and there were many people who were saying, well, this is a boondoggle. It's turned out to be anything but, hasn't it?
There have been some very significant problems. When it got off the ground, the problem was the lithium batteries, and they had to be able to contain some fires that started in lithium battery technology. Because, you know, we're not that far along on lithium battery technology with our airplanes or our cars. And also, they ran up about $30 billion in deferred costs for the development of this airplane, and that hasn't really been paid off yet.
So they're still selling the 787, the first version of the Dreamliner. I saw the other day that Boeing sold some to an international carrier. When you talk about the focus changing and moving to these other aircraft, what is that? What does that mean exactly? Will there be less emphasis on selling the other, or will they try to sell all of them?
Boeing says they'll be trying to sell all three models, you know, just as a car company might sell three models of the same vehicle. There are some who question Boeing's continued commitment to the first airplane as they develop the second and third. But if you want to look at an example, United Airlines is a pretty good example of one of the bigger Boeing 787 users, and they say they will be taking all three over time and using them for different functions. For instance, United has a China base in San Francisco, the biggest U.S. hub for China and Asia. They use the 8 to fly to Chengdu. They're about to use the 9, which has more range, to fly to Singapore. And one can expect that when the 10 is ready in 2 years, they will also use that aircraft.
When we talk about 20% more fuel efficiency for these long-haul aircraft, what does that spell in terms of dollar savings for a company like United?
I can't say specifically, but, you know, millions of dollars per year per aircraft.
And so is there something special about the way this aircraft is designed, or is it just the future of how aircraft is being designed with, you know, lighter bodies and more future?
It's mainly a matter of using composites, never done before this aircraft, using composites to build the aircraft, and they're lighter.
If there are investors out there watching this, is this a good bet to invest on Boeing and these 787s?
Well, when you buy Boeing, you don't just buy the 787. You buy a whole host of all of the problems and successes of global aviation, because there's only really two companies that make long-haul commercial aircraft. And Boeing's having a tough time at this. Boeing's a Dow stock. Boeing is responsible for 3% of all U.S. manufactured exports, so they're a huge exporter. The strong dollar is hurting them, and as they're transitioning to new model aircraft, the predecessor aircraft sales are not doing so well. So right now, Boeing, at this second, has been doing badly as a stock. But long term, they're one of two providers of aircraft, and the world needs aircraft.
Ted Reed is a reporter covering the airline industry. His work appears this week in thestreet.com. I understand you have a second part of your series on the 787 coming out today.
Yes, we have it. The second story comes out today. It's about the 787-10, and production has just started. They're not building that one in Everett, where most of their production is. They're going to build in Charleston, South Carolina. And the first aircraft should be ready to fly in, I think, 2018.
You can follow Ted on Twitter at TedReedNC and at The Street on Twitter. His work, again, appears in thestreet.com. Ted, thanks for being with us today on The Opening Bell.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
551, the market's all lower today. The Dow futures off 123 points. NASDAQ S&P futures off as well. Bad night in Europe and Asia, too. Let's get the latest on commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning. As we take a look at the agricultural report this morning, we go back to yesterday afternoon to 3 o'clock Chicago time, when the Department of Agriculture said its weekly crop progress report would be delayed until today at 3 o'clock Chicago time. The USDA did not immediately provide a reason for the delay. But looking at the grain market today at the Chicago, yesterday at the Chicago Board of Trade, soybean prices went down from their highs in August. Corn prices were mixed, but Monday, traders took profits after prices in the soybean market reached their highest point since August. Corn prices ended mixed as traders digested again the larger-than-expected planting intentions report for corn. Turning to the livestock trade at the Mercantile Exchange yesterday, live cattle and feeder cattle futures flat to narrowly mixed on Monday. Lower wholesale beef prices suggesting demand for beef was slowing down. You have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. A little bit of breaking news this morning in the aviation world. First, from Jakarta, where two airlines collided there on the runway today. A fiery explosion ensued. 49 passengers managed to escape. Also today, more U.S. flights are arriving on time. Airlines are losing fewer bags, but consumers are complaining more about air travel. The annual report compiled by the Aviation School at Embry-Riddle Aeronautics University has been released.
Welcome to the 26th Annual Airline Quality Rating Press Conference. This year coming in at number 13, and the first time being qualified to be in the airline quality rating is Spirit Airlines. They are presently in the bottom position.
ABC News correspondent Mark Remillard is with us this morning. He's covered this story. Mark, so who is the worst? Is obviously Spirit there?
This report looked at all the U.S. carriers and the U.S. airlines. And interestingly enough, Virgin America is the top, took the top spot this year. This is actually the fourth year in a row that it's done so. And of all days, being the day that it also announced that it agreed to a deal to be bought by Alaska Airlines. And so that was an interesting development that took the top spot for the fourth fourth year in a row. And then at the bottom of the list, when you're looking at what airlines did not do well, I don't think it's too surprising to think that we would see budget carriers down there. We're talking about the Spirit Airlines, the Frontier Airlines, these airlines that often nickel and dime things. You go on and you got to pay for water, these kinds of things. Any additional service on the flight you have to pay for. And so it makes a lot of sense that those might be at the bottom when it comes to customer complaints.
Spirit Airlines actually at the bottom, the worst U.S. airline for on-time arrival and customer complaints. What were the chief complaints against Spirit?
This report did not break down exactly what complaints per airline were received. What it does is it looks at all the complaints that came into the Department of Transportation. There were about 15,000 total complaints last year, and that's where we see that increase. And so they looked at all these other things, and they based it on these four pillars: these on-time performance, how they are doing with not losing people's bags, how they're doing with making sure that people aren't getting bumped from flights that are overbooked. The report didn't break it down into each airline, but it did talk about what airlines were doing the best and the worst in those categories, and that's where you see the Spirit Airlines doing very poorly with on-time arrivals and these kinds of things. And so that would be the indicator that seems to be leading the charge.
U.S. airline performance improved in three out of the four key categories, but the flying public still filed a record number of complaints. Why is that?
You know, it's interesting. I think one of the main driving factors here is that customers are paying a lot more fees nowadays than they used to. They're paying for checking bags. They're paying for canceling or changing their reservations. And so that may be putting them on a short fuse. And so they're much more likely to complain when something does go wrong. That was one of the hypotheses that came out of this report, was that might be driving things. It's interesting. Airlines really can't catch a break, it seems. They're performing better, but customers are still more unhappy. And this is an interesting thing, too, because this is a slice of the total number of complaints. As I said, this is what goes into the Department of Transportation. The majority of complaints go directly to airlines. And so, for example, Frontier, which was 11 out of these 13 airlines, the CEO of that said for every one complaint that they get from the government, they get 30 more directly to themselves. And so you can tell that customers are much more likely to complain directly to the airlines. But when it comes to the complaints, this looked directly at those going to the government.
The authors of this report go out of their way to say that the flying industry is at least trying to do the right thing by passengers.
Yeah, absolutely. They're, airlines and the airline industry is a very competitive field, even with all the consolidation that we've seen. And that consolidation, the report mentions that may be leading to some of these better services. You have one company that's handling a lot more carriers than we used to see maybe 10 or 15 years ago, and that's leading to some better service. But you might also be dealing with a little bit more bureaucracy as well, because you're dealing with one bigger company than you maybe are with when 15 years ago you were dealing with a smaller regional company. And so those might be things that are playing into this as well. These airlines are making record profits. You have record numbers of travelers going on airlines, 670 million people last year. And so, there's obviously a level of stress, and airlines are reinvesting that into new planes and things like that. That was the airline industry organizations released a report last month that said that they were replacing a lot of regional jets with now bigger commercial jets. And so certainly they're trying to improve on those things. We'll see if that will translate into a reduction in the number of complaints.
ABC News correspondent Mark Remillard with us from New York. By the way, 9 of the 13 carriers, including Chicago-based United, Southwest, American, and Delta, improved their on-time arrival rate over the previous year. But Hawaiian Airlines actually beat out United and took over in terms of customer care and on-time arrivals. And that's the opening bell for this morning. Thanks to our producer, Mary Sandberg. Our engineer, as always, is Ben Cortez. And thanks to Bennett Wakenight for production help. And the Steve Cochran Show's next. Stay with us. Be back tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock for another edition of the opening bell.